Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
So even though it didn't go full 8 mile, we still had a super wild card weekend for the ages. And now, well, now we got to sort through the wreckage here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, as we look back on this now here, obviously yesterday, the holiday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we had all of this going on, but we didn't get a chance to necessarily look back through what we had here. The second round of Super Wild Card Weekend, and we really built this thing up in such a different way here. How did this hit for you, wall-to-wall football for 2 days plus a Monday night outing?
Gojo, you know I'm all about it, man. I'm a football dude, so I enjoy being able to run all my errands on Saturday morning, everything that my fiance has got on the to-do list. I went ahead and checked those boxes, and then I was able to lock in at football right around 4 o'clock, and I had that until essentially it was bedtime on Saturday night, and then being able to wake up and have three games. You know, you had the 1 o'clock window, you had the 4 o'clock window, and you had the 8 o'clock window, and I was enjoying it, man. It was fun to be able to have football, and then you get to tune in last night, you got the last Manning cast, and then all of a sudden you're talking about Monday Night Football being on the playoff stage. So it was awesome to be able to have that kind of football. Not necessarily the most competitive games with some of them, but it was highly entertaining. And just to have a weekend, 3 days with football, playoff football, all 3 days, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I think the reason, because a lot of people, you're right, Chris, focused on the blowouts, the fact that we got to go to bed early on some of these night games over the course of the weekend. I don't really think that matters as much, because what we ended up with, normal weekends in football, normal weekends on NFL Sundays, what are a lot of us doing? Sitting around watching the Red Zone channel, sitting going from game to game, or getting whatever we got in the local market. We had one weekend now to start the playoffs where we had full slates like that, but everybody was watching the same thing. And you know what that means, Chris, is the takes just get hotter, because now we get to all see the same thing and talk about the same thing, which means if you walk in here today, we will have plenty to say about Mike McCarthy and the future of the Dallas Cowboys, because everybody got to see that upset right there together as a nation.
Yeah, and it didn't disappoint either, did it? I mean, once again, we got a special teams blunder with Mike McCarthy mismanaging, trotting out the punt team, and then putting his offense back on the field. They end up getting a penalty, delay a game. Like, it's just a disaster. And then at the end of the game, the play calling, I know Dak Prescott stepped in front of that and saying that he liked the call, but think about it. It went through three channels. It went through Mike McCarthy, it went through Kellen Moore, and then it went through Dak Prescott, and all three of them came back to the same decision, which was, this is a good idea. And so you have to question the brain trust, the judgment of the coaching staff, and the execution from the player standpoint in end-of-game situations, because the Cowboys keep coming up short, and now you have Jerry Jones canceling his radio interviews for the week in Dallas because he's got to make some major decisions in terms of moving his franchise forward and trying to compete for a championship with this window that he has with the current core players.
It's so interesting, because that was always going to be the case for Dallas, right? This game was going to be a referendum on their season in a way that was obvious, because the standard is different down there. We talked about it last week. It's that championship or bust type deal in Dallas each and every year with the standard that they've set there. But now that we've got this expanded playoff field for the wild card going into it, I think what it's also doing is forcing some teams into that conversation that may not have otherwise been there. Like, as we look back on all of this, this Raiders team that we had involved in Wild Card Weekend had almost no business, based on what they were facing going into the last four games, heading into this spot. And now all of a sudden, after this season, we know you were already going to be replacing the head coach, but there is added pressure, and they've been an added part of this conversation because you had this little bit of extra success. Like, you know this, Chris, we're going to listen to Kyler Murray and some of the guys from the Cardinals talk about this season being a failure, when in all actuality, we're talking about teams that got into this entire situation because we've expanded it. So we've essentially given a little more caviar problems to some teams that might have been only eating Happy Meals were it not for this expansion.
It's interesting, Gojo, because you pointed out the Raiders, and out of the AFC wildcard field, I would argue that they had the most competitive game versus the three wildcard teams that we were looking at. I mean, you look at what happened with the Patriots. They got the doors blown off of them in Buffalo, and then with the Pittsburgh Steelers going to Arrowhead, that turned out about like everybody thought it would, and it was a good reason why they were the largest underdog in wild card history. So as far as the Raiders are concerned, I mean, we can point to the different things that made it tough for them to go into Cincinnati and be competitive. It was the playoff debut for Derek Carr. They had played an overtime thriller. I mean, it came down to the end of overtime in that Sunday night game, the last game of the regular season, and they're traveling from the West Coast to the middle of the country. So, and they had a short week. So all of those things up against them, I still thought they played a fairly competitive game, but I do like the expanded playoff field. I know a lot of people will say, well, what sense does it make to have, you know, these expanded playoff fields if none of the wild cards can be competitive? And we did see a wild card pull off the upset in what happened with the San Francisco 49ers over the Dallas Cowboys. I think that was the upset that most people looked at wild card weekend and predicted. But it's still entertaining to see you go through the process to have these games played, and then just have an opportunity to have, you know, the heightened stakes when it comes to football in the National Football League, because you know it's a different level. It's a different level of compete. It's a different level in terms of speed of the game once you get to the tournament, and that was on full display this past weekend.
And you know it was on full display on different levels, because shame on me, the Raiders are a bad example in all this. When we look at the expanded teams for each division, we had the Pittsburgh Steelers on one side with a quarterback that thought he had played his last game at home and got all that love at Heinz Field and Ben Roethlisberger. And on the other side, we had a quarterback in Jalen Hurts who's been playing his entire season for his football life as the starter for that team for the Philadelphia Eagles that got the doors blown off them by Tom Brady and that Tampa Bay juggernaut that's still holding the trophy from last year. So those are the ones that people are going to point to. Those are teams that were probably going to have some of these existential questions already, but they got magnified because we had this big stage for NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. And Chris, listen, all other things considered, we got to finish this thing off watching The Rock talk to the Manning brothers with the world's most complete T-Rex skull sitting in the background of all of this. And I don't want to lose sight of the important things here, and that seems to be one of them, that The Rock, in addition to all the other riches that he has amassed, now has one of the most, I think, important archaeological findings sitting in his living room behind him.
And that was just one of three flexes that The Rock had, because, yes, number one, he gave you the flex and talked about putting the rock bottom smackdown on Eli Manning. And then he took a shot of his own tequila Terramania, which is outstanding, by the way. I've had it, for those of you that hadn't indulged. But, like, that's three big-time flexes by The Rock during the Manning cast. I mean, can you do it better in terms of doing a hit during a nationally televised game, a playoff game between the Cardinals and the Rams? I don't think you can.
No. He did exactly. He understood, and we knew this is what you were getting into when The Rock got brought on there. It is not often that Eli and Peyton get to sit down with someone with markedly bigger pockets than them on a stage like that, but that is exactly what we saw, and we all got reminded of why The Rock stays paid up.
There's levels to this, Gojo. There's levels to this. There's, yes, Eli and Peyton, and then there's The Rock. That's just what it is. We got to accept it.
Speaking of paid up, coming up in about 30 seconds after we tell you about Body Armor Light, we will get into the game that we saw last night here. The Cardinals going out here and giving Matthew Stafford what he has longed for so long here. What are the ramifications on both sides of this? We will get to that after this word from Body Armor. Now, guys, let Body Armor Light help you achieve your fitness goals this year. Body Armor Light's the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. It has no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. Athletes like Mike Trout, Sabrina Ionescu, Dustin Johnson use Body Armor Light to stay hydrated. So, why not give it a try? And from now until April 30th, you can buy $20 of any Body Armor product and earn $10 in fitness cash towards select fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com.
This was a lack of composure for the Arizona Cardinals.
I thought David Long's touchdown to be able to put us up 21-0 was huge for us.
Bounces in the pocket, hit from behind, flips it forward. It is intercepted, a pick six, David Long Jr.
Matthew Stafford has his first playoff victory.
You know, what they did in the first half, I think they held him to 40 yards. You know, I think it was one of the best performances in playoff history in the first half.
Just proud to be a part of this team. Happy to get one, looking for more.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Those sounds that you just heard, was the aftermath of a 34-11 Rams beatdown on Monday Night Football. Matthew Stafford gets his first playoff win. Kyler Murray tries to do his best Stafford or Wentz impression, throwing a terrible interception in the end zone. And Chris, just sitting back looking at all of this, we know with division teams it can get a little wonky now seeing someone for the third time over the course of this season. But where, oh where, did the Arizona Cardinals offense go in this game? Because they looked shell-shocked from the onset of this one.
Well, it was a masterclass by Raheem Morris, the defensive coordinator for the L.A. Rams, in terms of mixing matches and coverages and going up against that Cliff Kingsbury offense. I thought the secondary for the Rams did a great job of pattern matching, whether they were in cover three or cover four. They matched up against those receivers when they came in the zones. They took away the first and second read for Kyler Murray, and he was forced to hold the football. In the first half of that game, Gojo, Kyler Murray held the ball for an average of 3.1 seconds from snap to throw. And they had a pressure percentage of 47. So he was pressured on 47% of his dropbacks in the first half, and he held the ball for over 3 seconds. Now, just for context, as a defensive lineman in the National Football League, if the quarterback is holding the ball for over 3 seconds, that needs to be a sack, or you need to be hitting him as he's throwing the football. That's just the rules of the game. And so for that secondary to be able to do that kind of job on that receiving core and pretty much shut off the faucet when it came to where Murray wanted to go with the football early in the downs, to me, ultimately, that's what won the game. That's what allowed the L.A. Rams to dictate the complexion of it. It doesn't hurt that Rams offense was able to score touchdowns on two of their first three possessions. Then you had to pick six to make it 21-0. And then they came out of halftime and they scored a touchdown. And the big play on that drive was the OBJ 40-yard completion to Cam Akers. So I thought it was masterful in terms of the Rams playing complimentary football, but it was led by their defense and particularly their defensive secondary, which gave that defensive front for the Rams time to affect Kyler Murray.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's a great point about how the pass rush is supposed to hit. Like, people have heard us talk about that pass rush win rate stat all the time on here, and that's basically their line of demarcation is the percentage of snaps that a D lineman is beating the offensive line's block in 2.5 seconds or less, going there to affect the quarterback. So that's supposed to be the difference maker in all this. But you're right, the Rams offensive line that I had a bunch of questions about going into this game, despite their lofty rankings and despite how they had lived statistically, that had been a group that had struggled at certain points against dynamic pass rushing outfits. And I thought maybe with Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt coming back for the Cardinals, maybe they'd be able to do that. But we saw the effect of that ground game here. Chris, for Cam Akers, 6 months removed from an Achilles injury, to be able to come out and rush for 17 times for 55 yards, give them some meaningful snaps in a game where they controlled this thing on the ground, we're going to make this about Matthew Stafford to an extent because he gets credit for winning his first career playoff game, for getting that monkey off his back. He was 13 of 17 for 202 yards. They effectively made sure he wasn't going to be in a spot to make mistakes for them in this game.
Yeah, that's why I'm not sure how much credit we give Matt Stafford for this playoff win. Now, did he execute in the passing game when they called on him? Sure. But when you run the ball more than twice as much as you actually attempt to throw the football, I don't know how much credit I'm giving the quarterback in that win. He made the plays that needed to be made. I thought it was a heck of a catch by Cooper Kupp on the goal line for that touchdown. And I thought it was a great catch by OBJ in the corner of the end zone. But to me, those plays were more about the receiver and less about the quarterback. It was a relatively clean pocket for Matthew Stafford to operate from. He got the ball out on time. But I think that's thanks to Sean McVay being able to scheme those receivers open and being able to call the game that could in a way that could take advantage of some of the mismatches, some of the opportunities that Cardinals defense was giving up. So by no means do I think we learned a whole lot about playoff Matthew Stafford. I think that test is going to come in the divisional round when they match up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But so far, mission accomplished as far as the pressure being on him to deliver. He got his first playoff win, so he gets to check that box. But now we start to find out whether or not he can accomplish what Sean McVay and Les Snead had in mind when they traded for him from the Detroit Lions, when they shipped Jared Goff and 2 first-round draft picks to Detroit. So this is where it starts to come into play. This is why they made the move, so Matt Stafford could be the difference in the outcome of games against quarterbacks that are evenly matched.
Yeah, and that's, I think, why you kind of heard Matthew Stafford after the game. This was him in their press conference really trying to downplay the entirety of this accomplishment. Matthew Stafford in their press conference after the game downplaying the notion of his first playoff win?
I think it means a lot more to, I mean, you guys and all that. I mean, I just want to be a part of this team and help us win. So I trust in myself, trust in my abilities, trust in my teammates. I'll go out there and play and let the chips fall where they may.
So that was the story on one side. Kenny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris, everyone played within themselves on that Rams side of things, and that's going to be the strength here. Odell Beckham Jr. has got to be making Cleveland and Giants fans furious because he went over here and understood, hey, he's not the best guy on this team anymore. That role belongs to Cooper Kupp in this receiving room. But when he operates within that framework the same way Matthew Stafford did, the results can look pretty good. The other side of this thing gets awfully interesting, Chris, because the Cardinals sang an entirely different tune here. This was J.J. Watt after the game in their press conference. The Cardinals defensive end who came over here, spent the lion's share of the end of the season injured, and returned in time for this playoff game, giving his grade for the season.
I mean, it was a massive failure. I mean, from what we were capable of doing and from what we showed we can do to today, there's no other way to describe it than as a failure.
Chris, I know there were a lot of expectations for Kyler Murray, but I think we came into this season wondering about Cliff Kingsbury's job security in a way that probably didn't get answered in the back half of the season, and not believing that they were the favorites to contend in this division. So I understand they're going to have those expectations inside the locker room, but where are we really at with the Arizona Cardinals now?
Well, first of all, before I answer that one, I'm going to need for J.J. Watt to chill out on calling the season a failure. Bruh, you ain't played since before the trade deadline. Last game you were in was week 7. You just got back here. So to qualify our season as a failure when you've missed more than half of it, you got to miss me with that commentary. That's first things first. Secondly, as far as saying that this is a failure and evaluating it, I don't know how you could. This is Kyler Murray's first playoff game. And as we saw, quarterbacks in their playoff debut, they all struggled. Joe Burrow played the best out of all of them, and even he had a QBR of 62. Which is not a dominant performance. So, I mean, it just goes to show you it's a different level when it comes to having success playing quarterback in the National Football League in the postseason. So, I didn't anticipate anything different. I knew that it was going to be an uphill climb for Kyler Murray in that offense, especially without DeAndre Hopkins, because you talked about this, Gojo, in our pre-show meeting. Without him on the field and the ability to dictate or tilt the coverage, it's going to be tough for those other guys to shake loose and get open early in the down so Kyler Murray can get rid of the football. That's exactly what you saw last night. So to think that this season is a failure when you've clearly seen incremental improvement from Cliff Kingsbury in year 3 of his program. I mean, first year for Kingsbury, 5-10-1. Second year, 8-8. This year they make the postseason and they come one or two games short of winning their division. I don't know that you can call that a failure. To me, this is a successful season. Now, I get it. You're not going to be able to hoist up the Lombardi. And so I guess everybody looks at it a failure through that lens. Only one team is going to be happy. But to me, in terms of where they're at with their program building, this is a team that's right on schedule. I don't call this a failure. It might be a failure for J.J. Watt because it's championship or bust at this stage in his career. But based on the stage that the Arizona Cardinals are at with developing their football team, I think they're right on time.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And Chris, I think that's a very sober way to look at all of this, because with Cliff Kingsbury, the conversation is going to keep being about the second half of seasons, the way this team responds. But the bottom line is Kyler Murray is likely going to be on the cusp of a massive payday here, and I think the real expectations are going to start next year. We know how that fires up the clock for both team and coaching staff, and so we're probably a year removed from that for this particular team. But as Super Wildcard Weekend gave us a lot of that here, we had a few more teams added to those conversations heading into the offseason. Coming up next, we'll get to the big one here. The biggest question facing the Dallas Cowboys coming off a wildcard weekend exit at the hand of the San Francisco 49ers. Next, here on Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're going to get to a mistake that I made heading into Super Wildcard Weekend that I will now have to pay up on, because we know people don't forget around here, and I can tell you Chris Canty damn sure does not forget when a man owes him after a bet on this. So I'm going to run Chris Canty his money here pretty soon.
But
that was a low moment for me, man. Believing in the Philadelphia Eagles against Tom Brady. What was I thinking?
I don't know, but we're going to have plenty of time to get into it in the next segment. Then we ain't going to let that one rest. I can't let you make it on that. But just big picture, if you were getting involved with this weekend's games from a gambling perspective, if you went chalk, you found yourself a winner, man. Just bet on the favorites, and you were going to come through with a nice payday. Just saying.
Wildcard weekend took care of business for you on that. We didn't have to overthink a lot of that. Most of these teams are who we thought they were.
But how many weekends is like that, though, Gojo? Like, how many weekends are you betting on games and it actually goes like that where all the favorites win? That never happens.
Hardly ever. Huge win.
I mean, the Dallas Cowboys was the only one where a favorite didn't win, but I mean, that was kind of one of the upsets that everybody predicted. It got to the point before kickoff where you felt like the 49ers were the favorite, didn't it?
Oh, Chris, that was 100% the sexy pick on the weekend. We even talked about it here. I talked about it with Mina on her podcast. Like, everyone had kind of circled that one and said, man, Kyle Shanahan's got these dudes playing right. Jimmy Garoppolo's back healthy. Bit of a tough matchup against some young, talented pieces on the Cowboys defense.
Plus, it's the Cowboys. They get hyped up. It's the Cowboys. You got the owner saying it's championship or bust the week leading into the game. Like, it just felt like this was the spot where the Dallas Cowboys could potentially crumble, and that's exactly what happened.
And to your point about the favorites, though, Chris, the Dallas Cowboys headed into Super Wild Card Weekend, I believe, is Football Outsiders' number one team in terms of overall DVOA, their efficiency metric on that website. That's usually a great predictor for going forward. We thought they had gotten healthy enough in all the right spots, Chris, but you know this, the franchise that drafted you, there is just something about this team. And now we get to sit here on the other side of all this, wondering aloud, what do the Cowboys need to do this offseason realistically? Because we have already heard from Stephen Jones, the Cowboys executive VP. He was on 105.3 The Fan on Monday and was asked about his confidence in Mike McCarthy as their head coach heading into next season.
Now, obviously, part of that future, and I don't know what you can say, what you want to say, but are you of the belief or are you confident that Mike McCarthy will continue to lead this team next season?
Absolutely. Very confident.
So, very blunt on that one, Chris. Do you believe him?
No, I don't. And this sounds very similar to some of the things that we've heard other owners say, given the vote of confidence to their head coach in the aftermath of a disappointing loss for the franchise, and then days removed from it, or maybe even a week removed from it, pivot on that decision and say, well, we have new information now. Somebody became available that we didn't anticipate, or, you know, something happened, a change in philosophy, a disagreement in philosophy moving forward led to the dismissal of said head coach. So I think there's still the potential for that. And the fact that we haven't heard from Jerry Jones, that he's canceling his radio interviews, all of the media appearances that he'd already had scheduled to do, I think that's telling in terms of the Dallas Cowboys brass circling the wagons and trying to figure out the best path forward. And I have a hard time believing that that best path includes keeping Mike McCarthy as your head coach when you have a window of about one to two more seasons with this current core of players. Are you that confident based on what you've seen in the first 2 years of McCarthy that he's going to help you deliver a championship next season? Because I'm not. Gojo, when I look around at the Dallas Cowboys, I try to figure out what the hell is Mike McCarthy's contribution to this team. He doesn't call plays on the defensive side of the ball. He doesn't call plays on the offensive side of the ball. He's not good with in-game management, albeit timeouts, situational football, you know, making the calls on whether to go for it, whether to punt, all of those different things. Mike McCarthy is not your guy. So you have to ask the question, what is his contribution to this team? How is he helping us succeed? And if you can't answer that, if you're Steven or Jerry, then you probably got the answer that you're looking for in terms of whether or not he's going to help deliver you a championship.
Yeah, Chris, the one question that he might answer, and to me, this is a question that I think is very important for the Cowboys based on what you said. They got about 2 years where this core of players, some of which, like Micah Parsons, like Trevon Diggs, who came over here and helped you as young guys, are going to be on that rookie contract. And while you've still got some of the players that have been the bulk of your roster, that offensive line, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, are still going to be in physical condition to do this. What's the value of continuity for the Dallas Cowboys now? Because the one other thing that we've got to measure in all this is what's about to happen with your coordinators. Kellen Moore is a guy that came into this season and was retained from the old regime here. They looked around and said, we love the direction Kellen Moore is going. So much so that we thought he'd be the guy that maybe if you were going to knock Mike McCarthy out, they'd want to keep in-house. Second half of the season, that offense did not seem as dynamic as the one we saw in the first 4 weeks, and Kellen's got to answer for part of that. And then on the other side, you got Dan Quinn, who we've already heard reports from Adam Schefter and others, has been a part of 4 head coaching interviews and would likely be a candidate that's going to end up gone if you don't keep him. And so, Chris, I look at both of them and say, Kellen Moore, we don't know what he'd be as a head coach. We have not seen him on that platform yet. Being a great coordinator does not mean you're going to have what it takes to be a head coach. It is always an inherent risk in all of that, especially with a younger coach. And then with Dan Quinn on the other side, it's not like his Atlanta Falcons were the most dynamic teams of all time. And if you make him the head coach just because of the impact he had on defense, he's not doing the same things day-to-day with the defense anymore. Now that he's got to be that head coach necessarily, it changes a bit of the equation here. And so in all of this with that change your task with facing, Chris, I wonder if keeping Mike McCarthy around is just the simplest solution, knowing you're going to have to absorb change in one or two potential other important places.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from with that. And you might be right in terms of the continuity. But what I will say about Dan Quinn, if you are able to retain him and you potentially elevate him to head coach, at least you get to keep the man in the building that's responsible for the biggest turnaround that any unit in the National Football League has had when you look at that Dallas Cowboys defense. To me, that makes a whole lot of sense. As far as Kellen Moore is concerned, certainly could use a lot more seasoning. The offense wasn't as innovative or dynamic in the second half of this year or in the playoff game as they were in the first half of this season. Now, maybe that has something to do with Dak Prescott's calf injury. We'll never know. But the fact that he is out there means that your offensive coordinator doesn't have a whole lot of excuses. And in terms of their in-game play calling and what we saw at the end of the game against the 49ers, that is absolutely inexcusable with that quarterback sneak and not having enough time to clock it, not getting down, not knowing the procedures, not understanding how you have to execute that particular situation. That falls at the feet of the head coach. That falls at the feet of the offensive coordinator. But then, Gojo, the one other thing that I look at is the penalties. The Dallas Cowboys were the most penalized team in the National Football League, and that showed up in the playoffs in a major way. 14 accepted penalties led to 4 first downs for the San Francisco 49ers. That's completely unacceptable. It shows the lack of discipline, and that speaks to the head coach. And so when I look at Mike McCarthy, I don't know, man. It feels like it's a net negative when you evaluate his performance as a head coach. So I understand staying with the same guy for continuity's sake, but I don't know that staying with the same guy is going to deliver the results that you're looking for. And so I think that they have to look strong. They have to look long and hard and strongly consider a change at the head coaching spot if Jerry Jones wants to get to where he wants to go, which is competing for a championship.
Yeah, I think the Dallas Cowboys and really their head coaching position are going to end up having a lot in common with a quarterback in their same division. Listen to the Man in the Arena podcast, a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts the everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. It's available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For mortgage experience you can be a fan of, Rocket can. Coming up next, we will tell you which quarterback may have a lot with Mike McCarthy heading into the offseason, and I will explain the bad position I have got myself in and what I'm going to owe Chris Canty later this week. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And as we now wave goodbye to a bunch of teams after Super Wild Card Weekend, we'll get into some of the big questions, including for the Philadelphia Eagles, the number one at the top of their list after a 31-15 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But this game was about way more than just the score, who's playing quarterback for these teams, because last week on this show, I made a mistake. I looked at this game and tried to apply some logic and reason, tried to look at some stats, some areas where their strengths and weaknesses potentially were, and I decided that, you know what? The Philadelphia Eagles getting 8.5 points against the defending champs who walked in a little bit banged up, that was enough for me to do a dumb thing. Because Chris Canty, you saw an opportunity where you all of a sudden said, you know what, if Mike's really willing to be this dumb, we can get in to eat something stupid on air. And now, because Tampa went out there and took care of business, I have to eat freeze-dried cricket covered in mayonnaise on the air this week, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's basically just an extension of what you did at the Duke's Mayo Bowl back in December, but this was one of those opportunities that I saw, and it ended up being a situation that you just stepped into because I was so confident in my Bucks pick going into this weekend. It was Tampa laying 8.5, and I told you I have zero reservations about laying the 8.5 points because it is Tom Brady on Wild Card Weekend at home, and I know what kind of Tom Brady you're going to see when you get in the playoffs versus the Tom Brady that we see in the regular season, and the GOAT did not disappoint. He performed surgery on that Philadelphia Eagles defense, and we said going into this game that the Eagles were going to have some struggles on the offensive end because the run defense for the Bucs, we noticed that they didn't necessarily perform up to expectations at the end of the regular season, but that was because they were missing some key components, that being Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David, and JPP. They were getting all three of those guys back on Wild Card Weekend, and you saw the difference that that made in terms of shutting down the Eagles' run offense, and they put the game on Jalen Hurts as a passer, and he wasn't able to step up to the plate. So I figured that this was going to be a one-sided affair, and then when you saw with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, the score being 31-0, that was going to be an easy cover for the Buccaneers. So, I mean, this is one of those that played out about like I expected it to, just because it's a different animal playing that Bucs team in the postseason, and that's a tough task for a rookie, well, not a rookie quarterback, but a quarterback that's making his postseason debut.
Yeah, and a quarterback that's in his, you know, really the beginnings of his career as a full-time starter, yeah. Took over and got his first looks at it last year, but
yeah.
This was the first year where he really got to be the guy, and that showed up, and now I got to dunk a mayo, and like, honestly, it is going to be mayo with a side of cricket, because Chris, my strategy when it came to things like the Oreo or the PB&J or the donut was to just drown out a lot of the mayo taste with the volume of whatever carb I was eating. Now with the crickets, that I still maintain, probably aren't going to be that bad.
Okay.
It's going to be a healthy glob of mayo on here. Dionne Warwick, if you decided to become a fan of this show somehow inexplicably after beefing with me over the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I'd ask you to look away and maybe not tune in tomorrow, because if you had any respect left for me, it's probably going to be gone pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that Tampa Bay came through on this one for me, because I wasn't nervous until we actually made the bet on air.
Yeah.
Then that just kind of heightened the anxiety that I was experiencing before that game was kicked off. But once I saw Tom Brady go down methodically on that first drive and score a touchdown, I knew there was going to be no problem. And the fact that Keyshawn Vaughn got in on the act as a contributor in the run game, and then Giovanni Bernard stepping up as a receiver out of the backfield, you just knew Tom Brady was shuffling around the pieces. Okay, I don't have Leonard Fournette. Okay, no Chris Godwin, no Antonio Brown. No problem. I'm going to work these other running backs that I got in the passing game. And, oh, by the way, I still have Rob Gronkowski and Cameron Brate. So it just ends up being a situation where Tom Brady's going to find a way to work with the skill position players that he has available to him. And I think Tom Brady's football IQ is one of those things that people glossed over when trying to assess what this Buccaneers team could be going into the postseason.
Yep, and so for them going forward now, we get a really interesting matchup with the Rams to talk about, because they present almost the polar opposite of what the Rams were going up against in the Arizona Cardinals this last week. But, Chris, putting a bow on what we saw from Jalen Hurts here, we talked about Mike McCarthy. I think the value in the position is the same for both here. They are going to still be potentially in the spot that they are as your starter or head coach next year based on what realistic options you have this offseason. If you can go out and do better, you should do better. But if not, I think you have got a, you know, basically replacement-level player or coach in both of these, and given the team that they're around, could be enough for the time being here. Do you think that's accurate?
No, I think that's fair, but just taking a closer look at the Eagles' quarterback situation, I got to ask you this question because, I mean, in terms of having a pulse of the college football landscape, you're in a good position to tell us what's available via the draft, because I don't think that there are going to be any quarterbacks via free agency or via trade that are clear upgrades from what Jalen Hurts is bringing to the table. So I got to ask you, do you feel like the Eagles can upgrade at the quarterback position early on in the draft?
I don't. Let's put it this way. I don't think it would be an upgrade in the immediacy. I think you could convince me that Kenny Pickett might be a guy in the longer term, that one of these guys, you know, might be better in the long term. But, Chris, it's going to be such an imperfect class. We're going to watch, I think, Philadelphia talk themselves into one of these guys as the replacement. I think they've all got more upside than Jalen Hurts, and that's always going to be the issue for him as a quarterback, is high-end backup because he is consistent, dependable, but not a lot of top-end traits here. That's going to be the question for the Philadelphia Eagles going forward. Coming up next, though, we will get back to the Dallas Cowboys and the biggest decision they face going into the offseason next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.